Recording.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I'm an alcoholic.
Amy.
For those who care to join, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one. Please welcome our panel. We have Melissa and Kevin. I will read the first paragraph on page 5, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed, and confidence began to be replaced by cocksuredness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day, I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then, and I did.
My name is Melissa. I'm an alcoholic.
Melissa.
My sobriety date is September 8, 2014. My home group is West Ghent. We meet on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m., not far from here, over on Princess Anne, at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church. Come and see us. We'd love to have you. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other women, and I have a couple of service commitments. And those things all take a lot of time, and without this program, I wouldn't have the ability to make and keep those commitments because my life before this program, my life surrounding alcohol and the obsession with getting the drink was the only thing I thought about and was the only thing I was committed to. It consumed every moment of my life, my waking moments, which near the end of my drinking was about every 2 hours, because that's how frequently I'd wake up needing to put some alcohol in my body to be able to function. And you know, this reading here, when Bill's talking about trying to stop on his own, my experience isn't that I really tried to stop very often on my own. There were maybe one or two times when my ex-husband would say, you need to slow down a little bit. You know, your rages and your blackouts are a little extreme. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, it's a blackout. Of course, I don't know what he's talking about because I don't remember it. And I would have, you know, I would taper back. So instead of drinking 3 bottles of wine a night, I'd drink 1.5. And then it got to the point that, well, why open one if you're not going to finish it? And I was swiftly back to the volume that I'd been drinking before. And it was never really about the volume that I drank. It was the feeling that I was chasing. I was always trying to just anesthetize everything in my life, whether it was good, bad, indifferent. It didn't matter. I didn't know how to deal with it. So I would drink if something good happened. I would drink if something bad happened. I would just drink if the sun went behind a cloud for 5 minutes. It didn't matter. That's, you know, how great of control alcohol had over me. I had no control over anything. And, you know, when I did stop, it was after a 3-day bender that I woke up after midnight furious because I couldn't go and buy anything. So my option was to take a handful of pills and just end it, because what was my life without being able to, you know, take a drink and just blot out what was driving me crazy. And I didn't fall asleep. Nothing happened, other than laying and staring at the ceiling, wishing and praying to God that he would just remove me from life, because that's the only thing that was going to make it better. And I reached out for help that next day and went away to treatment and came back and stayed around the rooms for about 6 weeks. And I had this. I didn't need you guys. I didn't need these steps. I never got that sponsor. I never got a home group. I was good. I felt great. I was riding that pink cloud that you sometimes hear people talk about. And life was good. I was had done a 180 at work, and I was a good employee. I was showing up every day. I was showing up on time. And everything was great. And then 6 months later, I broke up with my boyfriend and I drank. And it was his fault. And that was the catalyst that set me off on a 3-month on and off relapse. I don't know if I'd really call it a relapse, because I was never sober. I was just dry for a while. So that is kind of the part of my story that I equate to what Bill's talking about here. Because once I, you know, broke that seal again and drank that one time, you know, it was a few weeks before I drank again. And then that next time, it was a couple more weeks. And then the next time, it was 1 week. And then it was 3 days. And then it was daily again. It was that quick. And the book talks about how progressive this disease is. Once you, you know, go back to it, it gets swiftly the same and worse. And that was the case for me. At the very end, when I finally walked back in here, my tolerance was nothing, and I had gotten back up to about a fifth of vodka and a couple bottles of wine a day, which I don't know how I'm still alive and how my liver is still in wonderful condition and functioning, because that's how I drank for probably 3.5 years, the end of my drinking. So that's all I got.
Hello, everybody. My name is Kevin, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Kevin.
Can you hear me? My sobriety date is June 18th, 2011. I have a home group. It's 49th Street Living Sober. We meet Thursday at 5:30 on 49th Street right by ODU. It's called the Ignite Building, so you can't miss it. I could totally relate to what Bill was saying. Even in my drinking early days in my drinking career, you know, I really didn't recognize everything that the problem, because I used to just love to drink, you know, I was young. And I can remember when I was working in a local shipyard over here, working on the ships with a lot of Navy people, military, and after work, we would stop and drink beer, you know, had a hard day on the ship. And we used to drink pretty heavily, you know, and unfortunately, you know, I couldn't stop drinking until I passed out that night. I'd wake up and swear it off. I was like, man, I would feel so bad. My head was pounding. And, you know, I'm never doing that again, ever, ever, because it was hot in these ships, and we were just, I was miserable. So by that afternoon, by 12 o'clock, I would start feeling a little bit better, and I would sweat it all out, saying, yeah, okay. And, you know, by 4 o'clock on the way home, I was stopping at 7-Eleven getting a 12-pack. So I never really thought that much about it. I thought that I wanted that drink, and I'd like to drink. You know, hey, I deserve a beer. I worked hard. But swearing it off that morning, swearing I would never drink again. You know, I slowly began to recognize over the years that, you know, I had no self-defense against that first drink, that obsession to drink. It just popped into my head. It's like, why did I do that? I'm drunk again. I'm hungover again. I was late to work, and you know, bad things started happening there. But I could never figure it out. So it was a long road of little things like that. Not little things, but there were big things of being able to recognize that, you know, I could not stop drinking on my own, even though I would swear it off, never, ever to do it again. And I meant it. It was very powerful and baffling to me, but I didn't know how to stop. And things didn't really get that bad. You know, I was young and relatively healthy, so, you know, that obsession just progressed in my daily life. And sometimes I would have those nights where I couldn't remember what I did and got in trouble, or bad things started piling up, and then I would swear it off again, and then next thing you know, I was drunk again. So it was pretty baffling to me why this kept happening, why other people around me were being very successful in life. Great things were happening with them, but, you know, I just didn't even recognize it at the time. But I just kept drinking and drinking and for many years. So that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Continuing on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. But it was not, for the frightful day came when I drank once more. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain, perhaps within a year. She would soon have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum.
You know, when he's talking about his desperate desire, kind of like Kevin was saying, I would wake up every morning at the end with a desperate desire to quit drinking, and I knew I couldn't. I couldn't do it on my own. I was so physically addicted to it that if, like I said, I didn't have it in my body, I would shake so badly. I would go to work, and on the way to work, I would drink vodka and grapefruit juice, and my reasoning was that was healthy because the grapefruit juice has vitamin C in it. You know, these little things I told myself, my delusions were pretty extreme. And I would, you know, if I couldn't get a drink within a couple more hours at work, which I work in retail, but I had a job that enabled me to be out of my store from time to time visiting customers' homes, which was not a great place to be when you're half loaded. But it made me really really good at my job. I was very easily able to talk to people because I was terrified to talk to people sober, but, you know, get a few drinks in me and I get really loose and comfortable. But I would, you know, I would have a bottle of wine stashed in my car. It was always white wine because white wine didn't get me drunk. The red wine got me drunk. So I would, you know, have ice cubes and chill that, and it would just be a little spritzer as I'm driving around at 10 o'clock in the morning around Virginia Beach. And then I would drink on my lunch hour. And then I usually wouldn't have an excuse to leave. So those last 4 hours at work, about two of those I would spend in the bathroom having a panic attack because I literally couldn't sign my name to paperwork without my hand shaking out of control. I couldn't pick the telephone up and page out overhead in the store. And this is, you know, a job that I've now had for 16 years. And I told myself I was a great employee, that these were just normal things that people did. Which is incredibly untrue, but you know, that's the physical toll that alcohol, the volume of alcohol that I'd been consuming, was taking on my body. And when I finally, you know, broke down and asked for help and went to treatment, I was without a drink for about 36 hours. I went to treatment back home in Southern Illinois, where I'm from, and I had flown home with my mom that Friday morning and checked in to treatment on Saturday. And the nurse took my blood pressure, and she took it three times, and then she looked at me and she said, "I don't know if we can admit you here. I have to call the doctor first. We may have to send you to the ER. I was like, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Your blood pressure is 170 over 120. You should be on the floor having a stroke right now." And I was like, "Well, I feel fine." And for some reason, I wasn't shaking at that point. I don't know. But I was 33 years old, and I had a blood pressure of 170 over 120, and I knew that probably wasn't a good thing. They gave me some narcotic medication to ease my withdrawal symptoms. They did end up letting me stay there and not go to the ER, but those first couple of days were pretty rough, physically detoxing from the stuff. It's not fun, and it's incredibly dangerous. I had no idea how dangerous it is to detox from alcohol. It can kill you. It's one of the only drugs to detox from that can kill you. So that's all I've got.
Okay. Did I say I like to drink? You know, I think a lot of times, you know, the progressiveness and just the sheer elusiveness of the things that I was trying to catch by consuming so much alcohol all the time. You know, I shared a short story about going to work and drinking, but a lot of times that even on the weekend I would drink so much. You know, Friday night it was payday, and then, you know, it spiraled quickly out of control. You know, the progressiveness was just taking a physical and mental toll on my body. Over the years, you know, I began to see, like Bill, going to doctors and seeing people, like, what's going on? You know, my organs started shutting down, my liver, my kidneys. I had a lot of different problems as well. I had a nosebleed one time, and I couldn't stop bleeding. I think I stuck something up my nose that night, or, you know, other stuff goes along with that drinking. And it started bleeding. I couldn't stop bleeding, and it wouldn't clot. You know, I almost bled to death. I ended up in ICU for 5 days. You know, I almost died. They were bringing the preacher man in there because, you know, they didn't think they could save me, but by some miracle, I'm still here. You know, just so many different physical things that, you know, I was aware of at that time that, man, I've got a serious problem. This is killing me. And normal people, you know, just don't drink like this. You know, it kind of, I kind of, like, you know, because most of the people that I used to hang around with and party with all the time, we were all having so much fun and everything, and I used to, well, everybody does it, you know, and then, but not everybody always ends up in the hospital all the time for their liver failing and all these bad things happening to them. Just the casualties and psych centers and mental institutions and rehabs. So, you know, I was in and out of those places because I couldn't stay sober. And, you know, a lot of my family thought I was just crazy. But, you know, I didn't realize it either that I was just an alcoholic, you know. Thank you.
We are picking up on page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable, at certain times, to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
I love this part of the book, and the fact that it's in italics, that first paragraph, means it's probably pretty important. And it tells me a lot of things about myself that I really need to pay attention to, and I didn't pay attention to the first time I tried to get sober. You know, we are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. I wouldn't even bring it in from the day before, the night before. You know, I jokingly talk to people about I should have had stock in Depends because I couldn't make it to the bathroom at night in the middle of my blackouts, and spent more time at Soap and Suds doing laundry on a weekly basis than I did probably a number of other things. And that's incredibly humiliating. And it took me probably a good year and a half of sobriety before I opened my mouth and admitted that to anyone. And it wasn't me just getting comfortable saying it, it was someone else saying it to me. So I know I'm not alone in that. But, you know, these things that happened to me, it didn't matter. I would, you know, wake up in strange places with strange people, and I would be, oh my God, that's out of character for me. That's not something I would ever do, and it wouldn't stop me. I would do it again, because my obsession to get that, whatever that was that I was trying to erase, or that feeling I was trying to catch, which for the longest time I couldn't catch. I was beyond that. I'd passed that point a long time ago. Maybe for 5 seconds I'd catch it, and then I'd be blowing right on past that. That was too important for me. It didn't matter. It didn't matter who I disappointed, who I didn't show up for, that, you know, work expected me to be there 5 days a week for 9 hours a day. I'd be there about two-thirds of that time, if that. That didn't matter to me. It was always chasing that drink and that line, we are without defense against the first drink. It's very true. You know, I have no defense against that. Once I put that liquid into my mouth, I'm done. I have no idea what's going to happen. I have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen, but it could be a number of things, and the next time I might not make it out of it. I've said before, I have plenty of drunks left in me, but I don't know if I have another sober in me. It's one of the most difficult things I've done in my life, but it's one of the most rewarding things I've done in my life, is to get sober. It just, you know, bringing back memories and thinking of the things that I did, I don't ever want to go back to that. And if I take a drink, I will go back to that. There is no doubt in my mind. My research that I did in between treatment and actually coming back into the rooms and getting committed to this program and working this program showed me that. And I, you know, I had to take every drink that I've taken to come to that conclusion. I had to be convinced. I wasn't convinced the first time. I'm definitely convinced this time. That's all I've got.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Kevin, alcoholic. So even after when I got out of the hospital, you know, I figured that I knew enough about, you know, myself and everything, that I should probably stop drinking. So, you know, that lasted maybe 2 or 3 days. You know, I was so, I can't explain it, just I started drinking again, and I just could never understand it, why. You know, I was getting irritable, antsy. There were so many things happening, But the ease and comfort that drink used to bring to me, it was just amazing, made all that stuff go away. So a lot of times, by this time, my life was quickly falling apart. You know, I lost a job, a really great job, and I kept losing jobs, my relationships, even seeing all that stuff. I couldn't stop drinking. You know, it brought to my attention, a doctor yet again had said, man, you need to stop, it's killing you. No matter how hard I tried or didn't try, you know, at one point I was thinking about just giving up, so I'm just gonna go ahead and drink, and because I can't stop, and I haven't been able to find anything that works. You know, I didn't know it was a thing to be an alcoholic. You know, I never saw my father drink. He was in the Marines, and he had a lot of friends. They never drank. My mother, she never drank, you know. So it wasn't like I grew up around a lot of alcohol. Not for me. You know, it was a pretty normal, you know, went to Sunday school, CCD, everything. Altar boys, you know. It's just like, man, you know, no matter what, it's just, I've got this thing, and that obsession just took me over, and I could never figure it out. That's all I got.
Thank you. Okay. Page 34. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. How then shall we help our readers determine, to their own satisfaction, whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking, for obviously this is the crux of the problem. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking?
Yeah, alcoholism is definitely baffling. It was baffling for me. I didn't think I was an alcoholic when I first went to treatment. I knew I had this physical addiction I couldn't kick on my own, but I didn't understand the rest of it. AA was just something I had heard about or read about in a book or a magazine or seen in a movie. It wasn't something that was even on my radar to consider. And I literally thought I was gonna go to treatment, I was gonna dry out, everything would be okay for a while. And then I could start drinking again like a normal person, like a lady, like I'd always wanted to drink my entire run. And that's just not the case. That's not how I'm built. I don't consider having one drink. That doesn't make sense to me. There's no point. When someone, you know, in my family will order a glass of wine at dinner and drink half of it and leave the other half on the table, I don't get that. That doesn't make any sense to me. How can you do that? That's such a waste. That's the obsession for me with the drink. And I now today understand that to be the, you know, mental obsession of alcoholism. I didn't get that. I fully understood the physical part. The rest of it I didn't get until I did my summer of fun, not fun. And then I started to finally understand that mental twist. And then, you know, there's this other, the spiritual malady that we have, and I don't know anything about that. I don't know, when I come in here desperate to stop drinking again, I don't know. So I have to latch on to some people and you know, form a little bit of trust that you guys have stayed sober for so long, so this must work for you. So maybe I should just sit down, shut up, and listen to what you have to say this time and not think that I know everything. I'm going to do this my way, and then it'll all be okay, because it wasn't that way the first time, and it wasn't that way the second time when I came in. You know, I was 5 months sober, in the rooms, going to meetings all the time, sort of working the steps, not really working the steps, had a sponsor in name only, and then all of a sudden I wanted to drink again. Out of nowhere, came out of left field. And it wasn't because I was having a bad day, it just popped into my mind, oh, this would be a good day to have a drink. And it didn't go away. And that's, you know, the mental feature, the baffling part of it. Like, where did that come from? Where did that thought come from? And I can't figure that out on my own. I need you guys to show me and explain to me and read this book with me to figure that out, to figure out what to do next and what actions to take to keep that from being a daily thing for me. You know, and today I have worked through the steps the way that it's suggested and outlined in this book with a sponsor, and I don't have that mental obsession to drink anymore. You know, I've had a lot of crazy things happen to me in the past few months, and not once has my first thought, second thought, even third thought been, you know, maybe I should grab a drink. It's been, who can I call? Where can I go? What meeting can I get to? Who can I help? You know, that's not something I would ever do on my own. I had to be taught that. I had to be shown that. And if I was still drinking, who knows where I'd be today. I don't want to know where I'd be today, and I don't want to know where I would go back to if I would pick up another drink today. That's all I got on that.
At this point in my life, I guess you could say I was basically insane, because knowing that all these things happened to me after drinking, especially I had people depending upon me. I had a wife, I had two young kids. You know, I had a lot of responsibility to take care of. Why would I do that ever again, knowing what would happen to me? But it is baffling and powerful, the elusiveness, that the insanity that I was in before I would take that drink. You know, it was just like, knowing all of that, why would I do that? And I just could not figure it out. There were so many things about my life as warning signs, but and doctors, they didn't know what to do with me, and psychiatrists, that, you know, they would want to, well, give me some treatment, here's some pills, you know, you just have one or two drinks, you know. And I just could, I said, you don't understand, once I take a drink, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't stop drinking, you know, and I've been drinking like this, you know, as long as I can remember now. So it is completely insane for me to pick up a drink now. I know that. I know it's going to start some crazy chain reaction in me that I just can't control. So there is, in it, for me, it's insanity for me to want to pick up a drink after knowing all these things that would possibly happen to me. You know, but a lot of times in my life, you know, I just gave into it. I just couldn't control it. The obsession was just so crazy. You know, I was unemployable. My wife left me. I was living on the beach, you know, and nobody wanted anything. You know, a lot of my friends abandoned me, which I thought they did at the time, but, they didn't want to be around me. So things got worse. You think things are bad now. Things will get worse. Thank you.
Okay. Page 41. That's not right. Page 37. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that, parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened.
How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? He's defining insanity there. And for me, the simpler definition is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And that's what I constantly did. It'll be different this time. I'll change what I drank this time and it won't be as bad. And that would be the case, maybe. That would sort of half work. And then I would get irritated because I'm not getting that numb that I'm seeking. So then I would just revert back to what I knew worked. And it was all a bunch of crap. Like, it didn't matter what form of alcohol I put into my body, it was going to have the same effect on me. It just, you know, may take a different route to get there. It just, you know, the mental twist that I have with regards to alcohol, I still don't fully understand it. I won't fully understand it, and that's okay for me today. I know enough about it to know that I can't put alcohol in my body. I can't figure it out. The words "I don't know" used to not exist in my vocabulary, or they were very hated words in my vocabulary. And now that's okay that I don't know, because I have you guys to sit here and say, it's okay if you don't know. This is what happened to me, or this is what, you know, happens when you do this. And I pay attention to that now, and I see, and I'm not as quick about it as I should be. I like to think things will be different for me. I'm special. That's absolutely not the case. So I just go ahead and do it anyway and experience that pain. And then I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I should have listened this time. Maybe one of these days I will do that and save myself a little bit of time and trouble, but I'm stubborn and it takes me a while to listen to people sometimes. But I do know that the more I do take direction, the easier things get for me. And that's the insane thought for me, is I've always sought the easier, softer way, and now I have it through what you guys suggest, and then I rebel against that. So it's, you know, yet another baffling feature of me. That's all I got.
Thank you. So did I say I was living on the beach? You know, the insanity of that, thinking everything is okay. You know, a lot of people in my family were pretty successful. You know, when I was able to work, you know, I made a pretty good living, and I did okay. So, you know, the insanity for me to wake up on the beach, you know, being comfortable, I had a little sand in my hair. I would make a nice little sand pillow. You know, I'd wake up in the morning, rinse the sand off of me, and walk across the street and panhandle for money for booze. That's insane, man. You know? And it was so difficult to break out of that. Everybody at that point had given up on me, you know. Said, maybe he'll get better, maybe he won't, you know. That is complete insanity to me. Why I was thinking that I was okay. Everything's okay. I got this. Look, I got a place to stay. You know, I got booze. You know, it was okay. You know, and I was totally delusional about my entire situation. You know, it's like, man, I'm living on the beach. What the hell? I was having fun. We're out there playing guitar, whatever. You know, that was, you know, I was pretty crazy. You know, we did a lot of crazy stuff, and I was just completely baffled by the insanity. And I was like, man, there's a lot of sick people out here. You know, why would you do that? You know, all day long, all night long on the beach, and just wherever I would end up from there, I would jump on a bus and we'd all end up on another beach somewhere. You know, and it's just like, man, it wasn't that fun. You know, it was pretty crazy there at the end. You know, so the insanity that to the level that I got to, you know, hopefully. That's why I'm here, because it helps me to get sober, And hopefully, to, you know, if you could recognize something by being here, something I say that helps you, you know, I would do anything to keep you from going through the living hell that I went through. Because this went on for years and years. It was just a life on, hell on earth, you know, for me. There at the end, it wasn't fun or glorious. And I would have every intention, even when I would get a little side job, get myself cleaned up, hotel hopping, and have every intention, hey, we're going to go to the sports bar and have some pizza and, you know, go meet some women and go dancing. I would have every intention of going there and doing all those things, but it never, I was speaking French by the end of the night, you know. It was crazy, and I don't even know French, you know. So you could imagine me just sitting blubbering and not even knowing what I was saying. So I was pretty insane, yeah.
Thank you. Continuing on page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come. I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen, and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow.
So my last drunk was a Sunday night after Labor Day weekend, the weekend after Labor Day weekend. And I remember very clearly the day. I went to brunch with my roommate and the gentleman I was dating at the time, who both knew I didn't drink, by the way. So not only am I drinking insanely again, I'm hiding it from the people around me, or I think I'm hiding it. At this point, I'm not very good at hiding anything other than throwing my trash away before the physical evidence is found, which my roommate never found. She knew I was drinking again. She just couldn't prove it. Anyway, we went to brunch, and they both ordered a drink, and he finished his. She did not finish hers, and it's amazing to me how I can vividly remember these portions of the events of that day, but other things slipped my mind. And it pissed me off, and I was like, you know what? Oh well, I'm just letting it go today. I don't even care anymore. I don't care if I get found out. I don't care if anybody knows. I can't do this anymore. I can't live this double life. And so we all went home and parted our ways, and she was going to a concert later that night, and I was like, this is great. You know, I can actually drink at home tonight. I've been now drinking and driving and drinking out because I can't drink in the comfort and safety of my own home because I might get in trouble. And I left to go grocery shopping, was my excuse, and went and sat at the bar next to the grocery store for about an hour, and went and did my grocery shopping and came home, and she was still there, and I was like, oh crap, you know, what am I gonna do? So I hide my wine in my golf bag in my trunk because I think she's going to search my car before she leaves for the concert to see if I have booze in my car. She doesn't care. She doesn't know. It doesn't matter. But in my mind, you know, this is how it's going to be. And so she leaves, and like at that point, I just didn't care. I did not care. All I wanted to do was to be able to drink the way I wanted to drink comfortably where I was at. And when I woke up the next morning out of my blackout, 5 minutes after I was supposed to be at work, I couldn't find my phone, which was my alarm clock. I found that outside on the brick wall, and I lived on the beach, so it was covered in sand. And I looked in the mirror as I'm trying to jump into the shower, and it looked like someone had slugged me in the chin. So I had tripped over something and fallen into something. I was not very graceful when I was drinking. I'm not very graceful sober either, but it was even worse when I was drunk. And I just, looking in the mirror, was like, I can't do this anymore. I really cannot do this anymore and I don't know what to do. I got to work an hour late and my store manager looked at me and, you know, I had kind of changed my tune and turned around quite a bit. Those, you know, almost 9 months at that point. And so he knew something was wrong and, you know, I was not forthcoming with any information, but he saw this bruise on my face, so he thought someone had hurt me, and I didn't let him think any other way. I'd hurt myself, but I'm not going to tell him that. And about an hour after I'd been at work, I get a photograph sent to me on my phone, and it's three bottles of wine lined up on my kitchen counter, and the tag said, "These aren't mine. Do you know who they belong to?" And I said, "Yep, they're mine. Thank God. Thank God I didn't hide it, didn't throw it away, didn't do whatever, because I was ready to be caught. I wanted to be done." And I proceeded to have, I call it an intervention, in the bathroom at work with my roommate and my parents. She called my parents on me, and they were like, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I probably need to go back to AA and go to an AA meeting." And she offered to go with me, and she went with me to two meetings that night. And that's how I ended up back in here, which I'm beyond grateful for. You know, that last one, I've found out since, and things start to come back to me in flashes. The guy that I was dating, I called in the middle of my blackout to come over, and he came over, and then I started sobbing incoherently, and he didn't know what to do with me. We'd only been dating like 3 weeks. but his best buddy was the guy that my roommate was dating, and so he got a hold of him, who got a hold of her at this concert, and like, I'm just screwing with all kinds of people's lives at this point. They're enjoying a nice Sunday evening in September, and here's Melissa shit-faced in her apartment, and nobody knows what to do with her. And I didn't know what to do with myself. Thankfully, I did know where to come back to, because I'd had, you know, exposure to this program at some point. And like I said, for that, I'm incredibly grateful. Thanks.
I don't really necessarily remember all about the time I got sober, and my sobriety date is when I remember asking someone to be my sponsor. I just don't remember anything. I was probably blacked out for the last couple of weeks or months. When I finally got sober, I remember the feeling afterwards, though. I do remember just the total incomprehensible demoralization it tells us in the book. That feeling that I just, you know, was just totally lost. I was defeated. It was just a bad place for me to be, you know. And then I remember waking up in somebody's bathtub naked with no water in it, just crying, just uncontrollably. And I just didn't know what to do. And I remember when last time I was in detox in the hospital, they said, "Why don't you try AA?" You know, and that just came to me when I was laying in the bathtub. Yeah, it wasn't a good place for me to be. And you know, when I finally threw in the towel, when I had that feeling, it was just, you know, it was either that or death. I just couldn't go on living like that anymore. You know, I had two choices in that, and going to AA or dying, because I couldn't go on living the way I was. It was no way to live anymore. So I did go back to AA, and then I, you know, my brain started clearing up, and you know, you get those funny memories of these things popping into my head when, you know, it took a long time for my mind to clear up. It's probably still clearing up. You know, I did a lot of damage. Got a lot of brain damage, you know. But I've been sober ever since. When I threw in the towel and decided to make that decision, you know, to ask someone to be my sponsor, I don't know what I'm doing. Please help me. You somehow found out the secret. A lot of people in here, is there some kind of secret? Tell me, how do you stay sober every day? That's something that's been missing in my life, and then all I had to do was ask someone, throw in a towel and just ask someone to help me, you know. And I just couldn't admit that, and that day I did. For some reason, it saved my life, you know. I thought it was always being manly, you know, not asking someone to help you or anything. I don't even know where that perception came from, but I think deep down inside, I just didn't want to stop drinking. But that, at that point in my life, it was just, I was done. You know, that just that total feeling of, I can't even put words to it, it's, you know. It was the end of the road. So I did come in here, like many of us have done, ask somebody to help me and sponsor me, and I've gone through these steps. It took some time for me to even understand a lot of things, you know, getting a dictionary, reading a book. But things came back to me, you know. It took a long time for me to even understand what was going on. Why I was an alcoholic, I didn't even know, but nobody knows. But I did do it, but after I came to realize that I was an alcoholic and there's treatment for this, and then I can get better, things got better really quickly. You know, I was pretty amazed how fast things got better. My life, everything. I was relatively happy, you know. I was waking up at a normal time every day, you know, slowly working. Got myself a job and, you know, got back on my feet, had a place to stay. So it took a lot just to get for me to get to that point. It was, but everything's been pretty okay since then. You know, I've been able to deal with a lot of tragedy in my life, good things and bad, you know, and I know how to deal with it now. You know, this program has give me a way to life that I know how to deal with everyday things that used to just irritate me and make me so mad and just want to drink again. So ever since that day, I do remember that feeling. I don't remember much leading up to that point, but that's when I decided to just say, hey, ask someone to help me. So thank you.
Thanks, Scott. The last reading for tonight is on page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
At this stage, unless I'm locked away somewhere with the key thrown away, no access to alcohol, there's not a human being on this planet that could keep me from taking a drink. The only thing today for me that's going to keep me from taking a drink is the relationship that I have with my higher power, and I turn that over to him every day. You know, and it's taken me a long time in these rooms to get to that point. But every tear that I've shed over that and stubborn, you know, I'm not going to do this, has been worth it. I have to have that thought in my mind, or it leaves an opening for me. And I can't leave myself an opening, because I know myself. I know if I have options, I will take the other option. I won't take the hard line that I need to take for myself. And that's just how it is for me today, because I absolutely, absolutely do not ever want to pick up another drink in my life. I know it will kill me. I don't have any doubt about that today. This program has taught me a lot, and, you know, that's a very finite thing. It used to be what I wished for, and I don't wish for that today. I have a lot of things in my life. I have a lot of things ahead of me in my life, hopefully, that I don't want to lose out on. You know, I'm a daughter to my parents again. I'm an aunt to my nephews. I'm a sister to my brother. You know, I'm a friend that shows up and does things for people. That's not where I was a very short time ago, and to be able to say that today is incredible. The feeling that I get from that is far better than any feeling that I ever received from taking any kind of a drink. It was what I always chased, and I didn't know what it was I was chasing and how I was going to get it. But this program has given me that feeling that I've chased. I've, you know, filled that hole in my soul. And I've done that through working the rest of the steps. You know, this is only step one. There's 11 more. they're in order for a reason, and I'm really grateful that I, instead of doing it my first time around, picked the ones I wanted to work off the wall, actually did them in order, because when you do them in order, they work. Thanks.
Yeah, so when I was young, you know, I told you I went to church and everything, but, you know, as I got older, when I was drinking and everything, I never understood this higher power thing. How could that keep me sober? But I told you at that point of my drinking, I was done. I would do anything to get sober. So they just said, just practice these principles. And, you know, they said to pray, I pray. Not that I didn't believe it or understand it or how it works, and I still can't tell you how it works, but I've been sober. You know, and that's a miracle in itself for a guy like me to breathe a sober breath ever. It's incredibly, it came from somewhere. You know, everybody has their own belief in things, but, you know, like I said, at that point in my time, it's either this or die. You know, so after a while, I started doing this every day. I started praying, and they told me to pray. I prayed, and I started reading the book. It's just like anything else. It takes practice, and then you develop a relationship with this higher power that I tend to call God. You know, sometimes other people has other names or beliefs, but it's worked for me, you know, and it's never let me down. Human power can let you down. You know, if I feel like I'm going to take a drink, there's nothing going to stop me, you know, regardless. If I want a drug or drink, you know, I pray. If that thought would come into my brain, you know, I get that ease and comfort and that relief from those prayers. You know, maybe I just won't do it today. And I thank God every day for keeping me sober. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Captain. We are going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? No. Okay. Yeah. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Yes.
Jazzy, I'm alcoholic 3 weeks today.
Hi, Jazzy. Welcome.
Hey, Katie.
Welcome.
Hey, Alex.
Welcome.
Okay. Literature is available. Over there. The brochures are free. The books are for sale. If you cannot afford one, please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone who is willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Okay. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, could we please thank the panel again for sharing? Good job. Good job. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd Street. Who is volunteering to read? Yes, Aaliyah, thank you.
Hey, Aaliyah.
Thank you. We have a nice way of closing.
Power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Woo!